Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Tesla's largest layoff in their history, GM's $3.5 billion Indiana battery plant, and Kia helps dealers sell EVs. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what renewables milestones are being hit not only in California, but across the US. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. This is your trusted source of EV information for Monday, 15th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We're live at 5 p.m. UK. That's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get the shows as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with Correction Corner. Not been over here for a while, actually, but a mistake that I made on Friday, which was to talk about how right-hand drive models, Australia would be the first market for right-hand drive Ford F-150 Lightnings, which I was very excited about. And I got very excited because we only get the plug-in hybrid Ranger coming later this year to our right-hand drive market. Thank you very much to one of my fine listeners who immediately pointed out they're not doing that. It is a run of hand-built right-hand drive versions. They're not factory-built right-hand drive. It's not going to be the start of a right-hand drive rollout of the F-150 Lightning direct from Ford, but an Aussie shop who will be doing the conversions. So, stand down as you were. Let's start with news of Tesla reducing its global staff by over 10%. Well, Tesla announcing in an internal email that it will cut more than 10% of their global workforce, affecting at least 140,000 employees out of approximately 140,000. For some context on today's breaking news, the company recently instructed managers to identify essential personnel while putting a halt to some stock rewards and cancelling certain annual employee reviews. This report I found via the Electrek website, but was widely rumoured over the weekend we've just had that these layoffs were coming. Now confirmed in terms of vehicle production. Why are they doing this? Well, the Gigafactory in Shanghai has been scaled back. Shift lengths for Cybertruck production at the Gigafactory Texas have already been reduced, and early reports indicating that some employees have already lost access to company systems. Now, you may point out that tech companies are used to hiring quickly, growth companies hire quickly, and then admit, hey, we made some mistakes in this area, or these people weren't up to the job, or we made a mistake hiring certain departments, and so they do layoffs. And that's true. There is a pattern in that. This is the fifth significant cut since 2017. At Tesla. But there was a 2% cut, for instance, back in 2017. They did a 3% cut last year. There was a big one in 2019, which was a 7% cut. But this is, you know, 14 or 15,000 people leaving the business, by far and away Tesla's biggest layoff. Now, we do have an email that has been widely circulated, purportedly to be from the CEO of the business, Elon Musk. And I'll pop that on screen right now for our YouTube viewers. I'll read it out as well for our audio listeners. And it says this: over the years, we have grown rapidly with multiple factories scaling around the globe. With this rapid growth, there has been duplication of roles and job functions in certain areas. As we prepare the company for our next phase of growth, it's extremely important to look at every aspect of the company for cost reductions and increasing productivity. As part of this effort, we've done a thorough review of the organization and made the difficult decision to reduce our headcount by more than 10% globally. There is nothing I hate more, but it must be done. This will enable us to be lean, innovative, and hungry for the next growth phase cycle. I would like to thank everyone who is departing Tesla for their hard work over the years. I'm deeply grateful for your many contributions to our mission, and we wish you well in your future opportunities. It's very difficult to say goodbye. For those remaining, I'd like to thank you in advance for the difficult job that remains ahead. We are developing some of the most revolutionary technologies in auto, energy, and artificial intelligence. As we prepare the company for the next phase of growth, your resolve will make a huge difference in getting us there. So that email, which I think is widely accepted to be from the CEO, Elon Musk. Well, despite the reductions over the years, Tesla's employee base has grown significantly. Back in 2018, there was about 38,000 people working there. And early this year, like I say, over 140,000 people working at Tesla. Tesla is scheduled to release their quarterly profits report just over a week away on Tuesday, April 23rd. Well, in more bad news for the company, which I'm sure they didn't want to have come out over the weekend, they have, it's just not a stop sale, but it's a stop delivery on the Cybertruck right now. This was first reported over the weekend with numerous Cybertruck reservation holders reporting of an email coming to them about delivery delays, simply saying it was an unexpected delay in receiving receiving their Cybertruck. Many people who had a Cybertruck delivery date and perhaps even were travelling to the service centre for their handover were told, turn around, go home, you will get your truck at some point, but no date on when the trucks will be delivered. Discussions on the Cybertruck Owners Club website and on Twitter reveal that the delay seems to stem from a design flaw with the accelerator pedal. Unlike other Tesla models that have a hanging accelerator pedal, Cybertruck is the opposite. It's floor-mounted, a floor-hinged pedal, so you not only have to push it forward, but your foot naturally pushes up. There's an upward pressure on the accelerator pedal. Now, application on the pedal appears to push the plastic silver cover off of the actual pedal itself. But the design of the floor around where your right leg would be, the bulkhead of the vehicle, means that this plastic cover can jam the pedal down in the fully depressed position. Now, we can have a look at a video on Twitter over the weekend from one person who had this happen, and I'm very, very pleased to say that they had the wherewithal, the calmness of character to be able to put their foot on the brake, which, of course, overrides the fail-safe systems that are there to override the accelerator. I'm not sure I would be so level-headed in a situation where the Cybertruck, a very, very high-performance vehicle, is suddenly accelerating at full speed. But take a look at this.
It held the accelerator down 100%. Full throttle. Now, I was luckily had a clear mind, didn't panic, and holding the brake down overrides the pedal. So I was able to stop the car, but anytime I lift the brake, it would start accelerating again. I stopped the car, put it in park, got out. At first, I thought the pedal was broken, but then I realized that nope, this was wedged down here under this little section here, not allowing this pedal to come back up. So looks like there's a recall or some kind of stop sell for that.
Well, all Cybertruck deliveries currently suspended as engineers will begin to the design of a modification on the pedal cover. Some saying that there's sort of lubricant residue underneath that may be present, either a redesign of the pedal or the pedal cover to fix that, to make it safe. And then deliveries, well, certainly a recall might happen, but all those vehicles that are piling up in stock will be taken back to then be fixed, and customer deliveries can then begin. Well, some news coming via the official Tesla Twitter account. They have reduced the monthly subscription price for full self-driving, and it's a significant reduction. It's a 50% reduction, lowering it to $99 from the previous $199. The one-time purchase price for full self-driving remains, though, at $12,000. Now, that package is basic autopilot, enhanced autopilot, auto steer on city streets, traffic light, and stop sign control. The subscription model has all the same functionalities as buying it for $12,000, but it provides an option for you to try the advanced driving features before committing any further. All Tesla owners in the US and Canada with the appropriate hardware are currently being offered a one-month free trial of the software in hope that some of them will turn into paid customers. And I think it's fair to say the reaction that I saw online on Reddit and Twitter over the weekend from those Tesla owners that have paid $12,000 out of pocket and now seeing the same technology on offer for $99 as a monthly subscription, well, they were less than pleased. Well, amidst much talk about a slowdown in the US for EV sales, it's always good to see when a story comes out which shows how one of the big car makers is moving forward as planned, and that would be General Motors, announcing plans have indeed moved ahead with their construction of the $3.5 billion battery manufacturing facility in Indiana. And in New Carlisle, GM has initiated site preparations. Now, that includes landscaping, constructing retention ponds, and installing utilities. Essential to the main building. Unlike previous partnerships with LG Chem for the Ultium brand, GM going with Samsung SDI for this venture. The new facility will make both cylindrical and prismatic cells, aiming to enhance GM's flexibility in EV production. Construction of the new battery cell facility is going to start for proper in 2025 and commence production of the cells by 2027. Well, here's a story that I think should be reported far and wide. Now, you know that as EVs become powered by renewables increasingly, they get cleaner and greener. And here's a story about California. They've achieved a big milestone by supplying 100% of its energy exclusively from renewable sources, that's wind, solar and hydro, for 25 out of 32 days. The achievement is unprecedented, and it's been highlighted on Twitter by Stanford University Professor Mark Jacobson, who I've been following, and as one day turned into two to three to four, and here we are. Now, this person frequently updates via his social accounts this fantastic achievement, California managing to meet their energy demand entirely through renewables, only momentarily at some points on exceptional sunny days in history, but now this record achievement marking the first time the state has maintained 100% renewable energy generation consistently over such an extended period. And I'll pop a link in the show notes if you'd like to find out more about this and this milestone that just keeps delivering more good news for adding renewables to the grid around the world, which links nicely with this next story. Now, how many times as someone who is into EVs, I'm an EV enthusiast and have been for many, many years, and how many times have we been told, well, all you're doing is moving the pollution away from the tailpipe and into the power station? Now, even if that were true, now is not the time and place for that debate, but there are many reasons why, even if that were the case, and it's not, it would be better. Because, for instance, power stations are much more efficient at making electricity from fossil fuels than a small internal combustion engine that loses nearly all of it to heat. But either way, we know that's not the case because many people have solar on their roofs, and this time of year, really for the next 6 months now, we're going to charge our cars, well, we don't do a huge amount of miles, almost exclusively from solar. However, however you charge your EV, the greener the grid gets, and some countries are almost there and some countries are laggards. If you look at China, is still adding lots of fossil fuel capacity. They're adding a lot of renewables, but adding lots of fossil fuels. Poland is a little bit behind. The US has some catching up to do. But there are many countries that are adding lots of renewables, and it means that for every mile you drive, your car gets cleaner. Well, now solar energy has been the primary source of new US generation for the sixth consecutive month, outpacing all other energy sources. This story coming from the Solar Power World website. According to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the FERC, Energy Infrastructures Update, as of February 2024, solar had added 1,043 megawatts. That's 84% of all new generation capacity. The remaining capacity included things like the wind project at Horizon Hill in Logan County, Oklahoma. That was 16%. Over the first 2 months of the year, solar contributed 78% and wind was 20% of new generation capacity, with the rest, a tiny proportion, being natural gas, oil and other sources. For the last 6 months, from the period September 23 to February 24, solar was consistently the largest contributor new generation capacity in the US, with wind in second place. Solar's increasing contributions have raised its portion of the total installed utility-scale generating capacity in the US to now 8.21%. We're getting very close to the US being a 10% solar country, overtaking hydropower. That's at 7.8%. Wind is the largest renewable in the US at almost 12%. All right, now we'll talk about a topic very close to my heart, because I've been banging on about this for well over probably 2,000 episodes in the archive of this podcast for many years that I've been doing this. The topic I come back to regularly is how we sell EVs, how we buy EVs, of course, as well. But one of those issues that I've consistently raised over the years is that the very business model that we have in many countries for dealers to sell vehicles, that those dealers employ salespeople who are financially rewarded for selling vehicles. And it is much easier to sell a vehicle with established technology to buyers in the next stage of the adoption curve. Now, early adoption of the S curve, and you're dealing with people who have done their own research, walking into a dealership saying, I want to buy this EV. What's the price? Okay, here's my money. The next stage of the adoption curve in the early mainstream is people going, I've heard about EVs, tell me more. And if you want to sell as many vehicles as possible to make the most amount of money in your paycheck, and these salespeople cannot be blamed for that, by the way. away, because if your goal is to feed your family, then you want to make as much money as possible. You want to sell as many vehicles as possible. You haven't got time to be ideological about this. It's much easier to go, oh, you've heard about EVs. There's nowhere to charge them. You can only go a very short distance. Hey, have a look at this, maybe even hybrid, but this combustion vehicle over here. It's simply the way the business is set up. And if I was a salesperson looking to simply make as much money as possible, it would be easier to sell a combustion vehicle to people in the next stage of the adoption curve. Now, Kia is doing something about that and introducing a financial incentive, offering up to $1,500 per vehicle sold at least this month in April. Now, I wonder whether this is a bit of a pilot project, and if it works, it could be continued and rolled out wider. This is obviously in the US. The incentives are $1,500 if you sell an EV6 GT, $1,000 for an EV6 2023 model year, $500 for a current model year EV6, and $250 for all other EVs plug-ins. Oh, and the same for the EV9, $500 for the EV9. Now, these dealer incentives are retroactive, which will go back to the beginning of this month. It's known as the April Dealer Flat Cash Program. It's designed to encourage dealers to prioritize selling EVs over gasoline-powered cars, and it's exactly what I've been talking about for years, which is if we want the dealers to sell, this is not a direct sales model, not a Tesla thing, but if we want dealers to sell EVs, well then let's incentivize the very model that we've set up and put in place, which is for people to make more money by selling more cars. We'll just pay them more money to sell EVs. I don't think salespeople like or dislike EVs. They like making money. And so if this works, I think it'll stick around. I think it'll be rolled out. I think we'll see others copy it as well. Current promotions for buyers on Kias include a $279 monthly fee for the EV6 with 0% financing offers on some EV9s as well. Well, the Beijing Auto Show is coming in just 10 days' time. We've got some interesting EVs like the new Mercedes lineup being launched there, the new face of the EQ6, and more as well. Of course, the Chinese names will all be there, and NIO will launch their updated ET7. That is their sedan, the model, any one model in their lineup, which hasn't had a full refresh lately. Scheduled for April 26th, opening day of the Beijing Auto Show. Reservations for this vehicle actually start tomorrow in China. Now, the exterior will mirror the current model, but it will feature some substantial interior enhancements, one of those being a new rear screen package with two big tablet-sized sort of floating tablets on the rear front seats for your rear passengers, not integrated or built into the front seats, but more of a kind of floating tablet style. My two kiddos would absolutely love this. I try and keep them off watching tablets as much as possible, but let's face it, car journeys are an exceptional, you know, long car journeys are an exceptional circumstance, and I'm often heard saying, have your Amazon tablets, watch some Netflix for the next half an hour. And externally, the vehicle will look very similar, but inside we have some new tech, and in terms of tech-wise, we have new tech, and that includes the new 150 kilowatt-hour semi-solid-state battery. Now, that is going to be tested tomorrow, or actually by this is because China's ahead of my time zone. By the time you listen or watch this, it's probably underway. They're going to do a live streamed range test for the new ET7 with its new 150 kilowatt hour semi-solid state battery. They say they'll drive over 1,100 kilometers, that's 683 miles on a single charge. Starts at 5:30 a.m. Beijing time. Like I say, probably underway by now. I'll update you on future podcasts how they go with that, but you know, that's one way of adding range, is simply adding battery capacity, but that is still a very long way to go on a single charge. Next comes via a single source news story, so I want to exercise a little bit of caution before I can get some more details on this. And Jaguar Land Rover are said to be using Chery's automobile platform for their new EVs. Of course, Jaguar Land Rover, famous for Range Rovers, Land Rovers, the Jaguar I-Pace, the only real vehicle they've had that's been electrified so far. But this collaboration with the Chinese maker Chery marks JLR out as a luxury car brand using their platform. This deal is said to be nearing completion, and I took this from the Chinese local media outlet 36KR. JLR are said to be introducing new EV models using this platform, both all-electric and plug-in hybrid as well. They have a joint venture already in China, holding a 50-50 stake. According to this report, like I say, JLR will employ the Xceed's platform, the first model launching this report says, by the end of this year, under the Jaguar name, and obviously the Jaguar I-Pace is getting a little long in the tooth, so that would seem to be right, but I'll chase that story a little more. Moving on, and more good news from a UK audience. Construction has officially commenced on a brand new electric forecourt. They are designed by a company called GridServe, and I'm such a huge fan of this business. They have helped me out many times, and I've needed to stop at the one near Norwich, which heads back to the area of the country that I'm from. But their electric forecourts often have charging for multiple, and you know, in the tens of vehicles, the most recent being the site at Gatwick Airport, which I'm still to visit, but looking forward to going to that one. Now we have this one at Markham Vale, and this is the next big site that's going to be launched near Junction 29A of the M1. This is a fantastic location to put charging infrastructure, simultaneously charging up to 30 EVs, high-power charging going in of 360-kilowatt chargers as well. The charging station is expected to be open in time for this winter. Well done, GridServe. Honda is in the news next, and they are transforming their Central Ohio facilities into an EV hub to begin operations in 2025, supported by a $700 million investment to convert their operations in Ohio into a specialized EV manufacturing center. The Marysville plant will undergo modifications to include a production line dedicated to make Honda's own EV designs, a new section within the plant dedicated to make intelligent power units housing the power electronics and the battery as well. Upon completion, it'll supply the IPUs to Honda's other production site in East Liberty, Ohio, enhancing the full integration of Honda's EV manufacturing. And Honda's other engine plant in Anna will be equipped with new machinery to produce these IPU assembly cases, and these cases will be sent to Marysville for final assembly and installation so that the whole vehicle can indeed be made in the US, essential if you want to tap into all those tax credits. Well, I think we'll try and hit three or four more stories before we go today. Illinois is further strengthening their EV infrastructure by investing over $25 million in new charging stations across the state. The Environmental Protection Agency announcing this $25.1 million allocation, supporting 643 DC fast chargers in 141 locations. 20 applicants are the beneficiaries, part of the Driving Cleaner Illinois program, adding to the already $12.6 million provided from the Volkswagen Settlement Fund, aimed at developing more than 300 new EV fast charging stations. The investment will more than double the current number of DC fast chargers, boosting the total nearly 1,000, significantly improving the infrastructure for both local and visitors to the area driving their EVs. Has come to the European Union now, and apologies, this one's a couple of days late. It was a press release dated 10th of April, which I'm only just combing over now. The European Union has allocated €424 million, an additional €424 million, to fund 42 new projects to expand EV infrastructure in Europe. These projects are funded under the Alternative Fuels Infrastructure Facility program, part of their Connecting Europe program, which focuses on infrastructure. The latest funding round, the fifth and final call for the proposals, with a submission deadline last November, has finally selected the projects to get the financial backing. The grants are intended to be used in conjunction with major financial institutions to maximise the impact of funding EV charging. Among the infrastructure to be developed are 4,200 DC fast chargers across key routes, the so-called Trans-European Transport Network. Now, since 2021, they've distributed over €1.3 billion to support 27,000 EV charging points and electrifying the ground operations at 63 airports as well. If you're new here, by the way, and you're watching the video version of this on YouTube, help us get to 10,000 subscribers on the channel, hopefully by this summer. If you're not already subscribed, hit subscribe and we'll get to 10K together. That'd be an amazing achievement as we spread the word about EVs and how they are powered. Now, this Bloomberg article that I found over the weekend is a long read about how Amazon has established now 17,000 EV chargers across 120 US warehouses, and actually in the process becoming the country's largest private EV charging operator. Well, these chargers are used primarily for the Rivian delivery vans, helping Amazon go EV in their EV sort of adoption plans, outpacing many of their competitors because of that investment in Rivian. Last I saw, they were sticking to the 100,000 number by 2030. 13,500 of them have been delivered so far. Well, the head of Amazon's logistics team, Chris Atkins, talked about the challenges in preparing the infrastructure for EVs, noting that it was a surprise for the Amazon team about how long it would take to prepare for the infrastructure. In 2020, discussions began with major US utilities, which focused on how much power Amazon would need, leading to solutions during the pandemic, for instance, such as the Commonwealth Edison company repurposing old transformers to help meet Amazon's requirements. But even Amazon, who are used to operating at, some would say, a breakneck speed in some parts of their business in terms of innovation and bringing things to market, surprised that having to deal with things like infrastructure, power companies, it can be a very, very slow process. And that is definitely one part of our industry that could be done, that certainly I think politicians, if they could do anything, it would help grease the wheels of those conversations between power companies, infrastructure providers, and getting chargers in the ground. These timescales are measured in months and years, not weeks. Well, in another example in this Bloomberg article, by spring of 2022, Rivian started delivering large quantities of their vans to Amazon, and additional power was needed. So it was routed to an Amazon warehouse in Chicago's Pullman District, supporting about 1,100 chargers in four local warehouses. There's another example of how these needs were met. I'll pop a link to this full article in the show notes. And one final story. By the way, if you'd like these podcasts first and ad-free, you can be part of our Patreon Legends gang. Check out patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. It's how I make a living these days. Incredible. I couldn't do it without the individuals and the organizations and businesses that fund this podcast and spread the word about EVs. No pressure. You haven't got to. It'll always be free online, maybe ad-supported, but you can get this show on the air and be a Patreon Legend. I'd invite you to have a look. Now, final story. And DFDS. Let's talk shipping. Actually, and DFDS announcing plans to introduce six pure battery-powered vessels to the English Channel, the first two operating by 2030. Many of my UK listeners will know the English Channel. Not only is it a short stretch of water between the UK and mainland Europe, mainly to France, but it's the busiest waterway in the world. It's the busiest section of waterways in the world. Now, this commitment to electrify cross-channel transport was reinforced recently with UK politicians in a meeting with them, and the choice to deploy electric vessels on the English Channel, mainly because of the short distance between the UK and continental Europe. These routes are ideal for rolling out electric power, they say. The English Channel is a major shipping corridor, accounting for 33% of trade between the EU and the UK, linking two of the world's largest economies. DFDS operates 12 routes that connect the UK with France, Germany and Netherlands, Sweden and Denmark too. The business is about 3,500 people in five ports, by the way. So great news that they are going electric. Well, if you're a business or individual who'd like to get a daily mention on the podcast, you can be a premium partner as part of our Patreon Legends program for everyone, maybe producers or exec producers. It's a posh coffee or two per month, and it gets this show on the air and spreads the word about EVs and how we power them. Thanks to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel. He's so busy. There's stuff on that channel every day. Where does he find the time? Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map. And I use it all the time. And you should too. It's brilliant. And LeasePlan Electric Moments. They provide all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good and see you tomorrow. Oh, and remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.